The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio. I'm Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Because, see, we can't be we the people if we don't have all three of us. Otherwise, it's messed up. We have a serious topic, but I'll tell you what, we're not going to do it in a serious way, of course, because it's going to be a lot more fun to do it in the we the people way. We have entitled the program today Musical Chairs at the VA, and they are musical, and it is really stunning. Just by way of a little bit of setup, we are going to play for you a clip from a hearing that took place April 22nd of this year. You can find all of this online at wethepeopleradio.us. I should do our housekeeping, huh?
Yeah, do the housekeeping.
We are live, noon to 2, in California. You can join us at wethepeopleradio.us, and there is a chat link there that's up for the whole 2 hours because this is a live program in California. Then it will air again Monday in Philadelphia and New Jersey from 1 to 3. So just, you know, one little fun aside is the people that will be roasting today actually work and live, some of the main players live in Philadelphia, which is fun. We'll be speaking with Kristen Rule, who is a whistleblower at the VA in Philadelphia. She was at the hearing where this whole thing started. And a lot of times the Inspector General is who stands in between Congress and an agency. Congress makes laws, agency creates the regulations, blah, 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 carries them out. But they are executive branch folks. So that's why Congress can't hire them or fire them. All we can do is control their funding. Well, when it comes to the VA, if you talk about cutting funding to, you know, keep an agency on track or punish them for, you know, wasting money or whatever, then it's seen as punishing the veterans. And that's probably how the VA would carry that out anyway, so I guess it's probably true. So Congress really is kind of hogtied there. They can't really cut their funding. But they can certainly send in the Inspector General and do oversight. Lots of times the Inspector General reports come out, and regardless of what they found, it basically says, oh, they needed more training and more oversight, blah, 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 blah. And it sounds like, you know, bureaucratic nothingness. The report that came out September 28th that I have linked on the site for you is Veterans Benefits Administration Administrative Investigation, and it's entitled Inappropriate Use of Position and Misuse of Relocation Program and Incentives. Doesn't sound, you know, too exciting, but it involves like $1.8 million.
Was there misdoing going on?
well, you just wait 2 hours and then you make your own mind up. This report's like 39 pages, I guess, with the addendums. And it's, seriously, it's good reading. You see this corruption, this little criminal enterprise they have going on. It's not really so little at the top levels of management. Starts with the undersecretary and kind of rolls down through management. 9 times out of 10, the problems at VA don't involve the rank and file. They involve management. And a lot of times they kind of get away with it because, well, you can't bust them on some of the things. This, I do believe, is going to be in the crosshairs. There will be another hearing on October 21st, 10 something in the morning, 10:30, I think Kristen said, and that just, you know, in a couple of weeks. So if you're interested in that, reminder, the hearing that we're going to play this clip from that started this investigation happened on April 22nd this year. The bad part was it was the same day as the Baltimore riots or whatever started, and so that preempted everything on C-SPAN. And so these hearings really never aired. But anyway, they're online. We've got links for you. And Bob's going to play the beginning so you can see the cast. You can hear the cast of characters and who it is we're dealing with. I think you'll find it interesting.
I are prepared to answer your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pummel. Thank you, Ms. Holliday, for your testimony. Mr. Pummel, as you know, this committee is very interested in VA's decision to pay out more than $300,000 to move Ms. Rubens from the D.C. metro area to Philadelphia. As I read in a letter that I received from Ms. Hickey, that this was actually your recommendation. First thing I want to know is I was reading an Office of Personnel Management guidance. It says that it can be used if the agency determines that the position is likely to be difficult to fill in the absence of using this incentive. It seems to me that Philadelphia would not be one of those areas that would be difficult to fill. So could you very quickly tell me why this program was needed to be used?
Philadelphia is one of our largest and most difficult regional offices. It is tough to fill. The previous RO director that we had in there, it took us almost 6 months to find somebody that was willing to go in there and do the job. When we realized that we're having problems in Philadelphia, one of the first names that came up was Ms. Rubens, and we knew it was going to be tough to get her to go into Philadelphia and try to fix the situation for her.
Could you tell me what types of advertising or attempts did you make before the decision to move Ms. Rubens to that position?
We did not advertise that position. We just went through the RO director.
Were any other employees encouraged to apply?
No, they were not.
Okay. At what point was it clear to you that the AVO needed to be offered in order to fill the position?
When the previous director was in there was from a senior executive from another agency in the federal government.
Did that individual get the AVO to move?
No, he did not.
Okay.
We attempted to bring in an executive from another agency to fix some of the problems there, thinking that some outside blood would help us a little bit. We realized very quickly that it was just too complex. There was too much going on.
Okay, thank you.
We needed
Ms.
one
Rubens,
of our most senior people.
Ms. Rubens, did you sign a written statement that you would not accept a transfer unless the relocation expenses were authorized?
Yes, I did.
And why was that?
The RELO package that VA has is offered in some instances, and because it was offered to me and I thought it beneficial to help me ease that transition from one office in one city to another in an effort to be there as quickly as possible.
And you never intended to go to Philadelphia at any time in your career?
I would tell you that I had been in Washington for a number of years. If I were to leave Washington, it was to take on an office that had a large, complex operation. Philadelphia fit that bill.
And so that was the reason that you left. You went to Philadelphia because you wanted to go to a large, complex office, and that fit the bill that was in your career path.
Sir, at that time it was an option, and there was a discussion about whether or not I would be able to meet the needs of the regional office. And I felt like and still feel like I am capable of doing that.
Are you eligible for retirement?
No, sir, I'm not.
How long before you can retire?
Several years.
One, two, three, four? Do you know? How about two? Is that close?
I think it's a little bit more than two, but less than five.
Okay. Do you have any family members that live close by?
I do.
And who might that be?
My sister, my mother, nephews.
How close?
Wilmington. I grew up in Delaware.
28 minutes. Close?
It depends on how you go and what time of day, sir.
So you did not want to move unless you got a $300,000-plus relocation package to be close to your mother and your family?
No, sir, that's not the issue.
But you had to get this relocation package to be close to your family?
It was part of a benefit program that VA offers to ensure transition is as quick and as smooth as possible to an office that needed leadership.
And so you would not have moved close to your mother had you not gotten this package?
I don't know that, sir.
I guarantee you.
Double stripe, it's on. Let's go!
Every team has pregame rituals.
Come on, guys. Come on. Let's go.
Now a word from our sponsor.
The Ustream just cut a commercial. Right, just getting to the good part,
the
too.
Good part.
Dang it. Man. You know, I just played that at home. It was fine. No commercial came up. That's what you get with free video online. Anyway.
We'll bring it back momentarily.
All right. So the cast of characters you were listening to, it was Jeff Miller, chairman of the Veterans Affairs Committee. And he started by questioning Danny Pummel, who works in Washington, D.C. for the undersecretary. And the person who was unable to decide whether or not she would have moved closer to her mother without $300,000, didn't know when she retires. That's Diana Rubens. And here we're back.
Congressman, if I could interject.
No, sir, I'm talking to Ms. Rubens. Thank you. Had you ever told anybody prior to this being decided that you had a desire to go to Philadelphia?
When the director before the director I replaced retired, I had expressed an interest in Philadelphia.
Would you have gone then without getting the $300,000 relocation package?
I can't answer that, sir. I don't know what I would or wouldn't have done many years ago. Off the top of my head, I'm not sure. Three to five years ago.
So you did sign a written statement, basically. So was this a Diana Rubens move, or was this a management-directed move?
I don't understand the question.
Either you made the decision to go to Philadelphia or management said you needed to go to Philadelphia.
I could not have reassigned myself to Philadelphia.
Did the management ask you to go to Philadelphia or did you choose to go to Philadelphia?
I'm not sure how to answer that question.
How did you make a decision to decide to go to Philadelphia? You just woke up one morning and decided to move to Philadelphia, or did management say you needed to go fix the problems at Philadelphia?
There were discussions with my leadership.
Did management tell you it was a management decision, or did you make the decision? It's one or the other.
I guess I'm just not understanding the question. It was not a directed reassignment?
It was not a directed reassignment.
It was not a directed, based on performance or anything else, reassignment. There was a leadership need in Philadelphia. There was a discussion about whether or not I would go. And
you told him you would not go unless you got the relocation package.
As part of the process for accepting a relocation, you have to choose one of those options on that document. I opted to avail myself of a program for relocation to ensure I could make that move as expeditiously as possible.
So you couldn't have moved quickly without $300,000 relocation package? That's okay. Ms. Brown?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I just want you to know I'm a little uncomfortable with this line of questioning. I guess I want to know something about your skill sets, because I understand there are multiplicity of problems in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, she's very skilled at duping people out of a lot of money.
So enter the Democrats at the end. So after that entire thing, you flip to the you flip to the top ranking Democrat on the committee, and she's like, "Well, I'm uncomfortable with this." Now, do you have a clue why, like, nobody gets hung out to dry? I thought that was a pretty good illustration. So let's see. Let's take a really quick break.
Yeah, because the best is yet to come.
Because, yes, the best is yet to come. And we want to introduce Kristen, who has been with us before. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and you will see at the top of the page a tab that says Veterans. We've tried to coalesce all the programs that we've done relating to veteran issues on that, and you know, some of them are actually with Kristen and with Ken. Ken was sick today, so he couldn't come on. But they are in that Philadelphia office and been tracking this all the way along. Kristen was actually a whistleblower at the hearing on the 22nd when all of this stuff first came out.
Oh.
Hey, there we go. Talked ourselves right up to the break. We'll see you in 2 minutes. Joining We the People Radio. Online, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? But good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Just keep trying. talking mama, I like that sound. It goes so easy with that rain falling down. I think a tropical vacation this year might be the answer to this hillbilly fear. And voila, an American dream. Yeah, we can travel, girl, without any means. When it's as easy as closing your eyes and dream Jamaica is a big neon sign.
Well, there you go. If you're hauling down $180,000 to do a $120,000 job.
Yeah, go buy a little package of those umbrellas and get ready to stuff them in your drink.
Pocket that extra $60,000 and go on vacation. That's kind of the topic here because Congress has eliminated the senior executive service. When you see in the report SES, that's senior executive service. And those guys are prohibited from getting bonuses because there's a huge backlog. Regardless of their cheery little memos that come out that say that most of it's gone.
Yeah, but you know, when you think like a criminal, you can always figure out a way to bilk the system, you know?
Isn't that great? And if you can get other people to go along with you.
Yeah, get it all convoluted and get all kinds of higher-ups involved, maybe somebody will cover for you.
Exactly.
Until they get busted.
Enter Kristen.
Yes.
So, Kristen, how's life in Philadelphia? And might tell folks a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this disaster, in case they haven't heard the previous shows. We've got Kristen in the cone of silence. Yes, we did, but she's back now. Hey, Kristen.
Hello?
Hey, there you go. Okay, so give folks a little bit of background. How'd you get involved with the VA situation here?
I haven't been able to hear the stuff before, just joining now. It wasn't playing.
Oh, that's not fun. Well, we just played the hearing clip that I told you we were going to use, where Diana Rubens couldn't figure out how she got to Philly and big surprise and how many years she had to retirement. That was confusing too. There's something playing in the background of your thing, or we're getting some weird feedback.
I believe that's Kristen's computer.
Maybe it's on a little.
Wait, hold on.
Sounds of a struggle.
Sounds of a struggle. Oh, that's much
better?
Much better.
Oh, there you go. Because there was...
It's back.
He's back. Something's kind of making little squawking noises in the back. Anyway, now we have cars. Okay, so how long have you been at the VA?
I have been at the VA 8 years. And I started processing claims there about 8 years ago and ended up on the quality team, checking the claims, and it's been an interesting ride the whole time.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting ride for you. And, okay, so we're going to... The way I get updates on these Inspector General reports, but you texted me before I actually even got my email update. When this report came out last week, September 28th, on the inappropriate use of position and misuse of relocation program incentives, that was just a very good read. But your whole community learned about it because this showed up on the news, right?
Yeah, it was on the front page of the Philadelphia Inquirer in the newspaper.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And yeah, I know it was on the news in St. Paul, but I mean there was almost 100 newspaper articles on it since it happened. So pretty much everybody who worked there found out about it pretty fast.
Nice, and there we do have a nice news clip from. Let's see, it looks like your Channel 5 back there in St. Paul. We were going to play that just because it's a pretty good overview of what's going on. And I think I might have Bob call you back because we got a funky connection here.
Yeah, let's go ahead and play that clip.
So we're going to zoom in on the news and hear an overview of this thing, and then we'll come right back with Kristen.
By engineering a transfer of the man who used to hold her job.
The VA's inspector general says it sure looks that way. This is causing outrage for one Minnesota congressman who also happens to be a military veteran. And our political reporter Tom Hauser is here with more on the situation, Tom.
And they're taking a look throughout government to see how often this is happening. This inspector general's report says Kimberly Graves used her position for, quote, personal and financial benefit. She's accused of helping create a vacancy for a job here in the Twin Cities so she could then take that job. It could result in criminal charges.
Can I just ask you a couple questions?
The director of the Veterans Benefits Administration office in St. Paul wouldn't comment about the possibility of criminal charges against her.
You can contact our Office of Public Affairs.
Okay, and we've tried that, but do you have any comment?
The Office of Public Affairs will respond to you. Thank you.
According to this report from the VA Inspector General, Kimberly Graves engineered her own transfer from an East Coast office of the VA here to St. Paul. In her job on the East Coast, she had a lot more responsibility, overseeing 16 regional offices in 14 states. Here in St. Paul, she oversees just one office, but she kept the same rate of pay. Despite far fewer responsibilities, Graves retained her annual pay of nearly $174,000. She was also paid more than $129,000 in relocation expenses.
This is outrageous that it appears like it was manipulated, creating positions that weren't really true to try and justify going around a ban we put on bonuses.
Congressman Tim Walz says a whistleblower brought attention to this. In Graves' case, the inspector general says she influenced the transfer of the former St. Paul VA director to Baltimore so she could get his job here, along with a hefty relocation expense paid for by taxpayers.
Is this taking away services for veterans by this type of thing happening? Are we spending taxpayer money on things that aren't providing quality care for veterans? So they have every right to be outraged.
The Graves case came to light as the result of a similar case involving the VA director in Philadelphia. Diana Rubin kept her $181,000 salary and received $274,000 in relocation expenses. Both cases will be considered for criminal prosecution, and the VA says they're examining all relocation and incentive procedures and that they are cooperating with the Inspector General and any other federal agencies that get involved.
I think that's the thing that most regular folks are going to have a hard time understanding, $129,000 in moving or relocation expenses.
And involving three different offices, three different people, all with big expenses, all paid for by taxpayers.
And the investigation is ongoing.
Exactly.
All right, Tom Hauser, thanks.
Okay. So, kind of a hot seat there in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
for Ms.
It's getting some play.
For Ms. Rubens.
Doesn't look good.
So, Kristen, are people talking about it at the regional office?
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. Try it now.
Back to the cone of silence. Okay, with us now?
Kristen?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, there you go. So is this a topic of conversation at work?
Actually, I currently work from home, so I don't get to hear the cubicle talk, but the day that it happened, I got probably 50 text messages all about it. So I do believe it's a pretty big topic of conversation at work.
Oh, my gosh. Well, this whole thing, I mean, this whole report, it's just, you know, she's reassigned from Deputy Undersecretary for Field Operations to the Director of the Philadelphia Regional Office, which doesn't, it kind of sounds like mumbo jumbo a little bit, but as Deputy Undersecretary, she's overseeing, what, 58 different regional offices?
Yeah, 50-something. And then in our building, she just oversees one.
Yeah, and you had said that she doesn't even really do that because you have a help team in there?
Yeah, she's the director, and then she'll have two assistant directors, but one of those positions is vacant because that was Lucy Philippov, and she is on administrative leave currently.
She was the psychic parties, right?
Yeah, the organizer of the psychic party. So
that was a different
then
show.
When all these, after the last hearings and things like that, they brought in this help team, which were people from all over the country that were very knowledgeable and, you know how to manage facilities, and they brought them in to help get Philly back on track and to teach us, you know, basically to come help fix the place. So there were so many different people in the building at that time that, you know, she had a lot of help managing Philadelphia.
But the funny part is she was supposedly going there to sort it all out.
Yeah, I mean, she was. That's why they say they brought her here, because she was one of the highest qualified VA executives, and they brought her to fix Philadelphia because we were having problems prior to her getting here. But I don't know. It's just been an interesting year.
Yes, I'm sure it has been. they in the summary, in the initial summary of this report, it it talks about, this is the Inspector General's wording, as part of our assessment of the VA's relocation expense program, that's that PCS that you keep hearing about, for folks who don't speak VA bureaucraties, we reviewed records related to the Veterans Benefits Administration reassignment of seven grade 15 employees who were promoted to senior executive service positions and 15 senior executive service employees who moved to different senior positions in fiscal years 2013, 14, and 15. And again, the Inspector General's wording, VBA management used moves of senior executives as a method to justify annual salary increases and used VA's relocation expense program to pay moving expenses for those employees. Annual salary increases totaled about $321,000 and relocation expenses were $1.3 million. They paid an additional $140,000 in unjustified relocation incentives and in total spent about $1.8 million on the reassignments. I mean, how crazy is that?
Yeah, especially when we have printers in the building that don't have toner and, you know, we're lacking different supplies that we need, but then they're spending money on all of this kind of stuff.
Well, I know that they asked Pummel and Hickey, they asked both of them if they thought, they interviewed Mr. Pummel on May 13th of this year, asked whether salary increases and relocation incentives were a way to get around pay freezes and bans on performance. Mr. Pummel said, I would say that's probably true. What the heck? This is like the gang that can't shoot straight. I mean, obviously not criminal masterminds here. They interviewed Ms. Hickey, who's the undersecretary, asked whether the increases were a way to get around pay freezes. Her answer is even funnier because I love hearing her answers. They make no sense at all. She says they were about level-setting pay. She stated further, quote, it was much more about resetting, from my perspective, base pay to get everybody, get the ends of the bands into more of a more even, more fair model. It's like, what is that?
I didn't understand what she was talking about.
I don't think she understands what she's talking about.
I feel like in this whole situation, when I read that report, it just seems that, I mean, it doesn't seem like she knew a lot about these expenses I'm just wondering if she asked questions about this kind of stuff because it's a lot of money.
Well, yeah, she did the same thing with Oakland, though, when they asked her about the 13,184 claims that were hanging out, the informal claims. She gave no fewer than two different explanations that were completely different, that they were duplicates and they were just pieces of paper, I think were her two choices. And the rest of them gave different answers. They had like five different answers. So these guys do this on a regular basis, just come up with nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten to the point, I guess, a lot of the people at the top, they're probably forced due to the different workloads and priorities. They have to rely on the people under them to tell them the truth. And in some of these situations, just from reading these reports, it appears to me that the people underneath them are letting them down.
Yeah, kind of. Except for the fact that they keep them employed, so they will continue to let them down. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. Well, they are both still employed.
Of course.
So far, but I don't know.
Well, you've got Graves, who was the director of the Eastern Area Office. Now she's responsible for just the St. Paul Regional Office. And let's see, she got $129,000 and change for her move. And the Inspector General says, we determined that Ms. Graves also inappropriately used her position of authority for personal and financial benefit when she participated personally and substantially in creating the vacancy and then volunteering for the vacancy.
Sounds like it was pretty hard to fill.
It was hard to fill. Okay, yeah. You move over. I'll move over. Yeah. He'll move over.
Let's not advertise this spot. Let's not tell anybody else about it. And maybe I can get it.
And the way, it just, you couldn't get away with this in the real world, actually. This would never work because, well, your company would go broke. They used, let's see, Ms. Rubens and Ms. Graves' reassignments resulted in a significant decrease in job responsibilities, yet both retained their annual salaries at $181,000 for Rubens and $173,900, so basically $174,000 for Graves. Based upon federal regulations, which obviously need to be reviewed, we determined VA could not reduce their annual salaries upon reassignment despite the decrease in the scope of their work. Crazy is that.
See, there I think there needs to be. I mean, they have to, if this is something that's going to happen, and I'm wondering if it happens in other agencies as well,
well yeah.
There should be some sort of rule or law that if you're going to reassign somebody, that their duties would have to be comparable. Because if you go from doing 56 offices or 58 or however many to one, you know, and that there's nothing that prevents this, that's, you know, yeah. I can see how that can be abused.
And that's obviously a pay increase. I mean, when you...
Well, that's a way of making, you know, really generating a bonus for yourself because you've taken a what should be a lower-paying job, well, and you've kept your previous pay.
Exactly. And it is a lower-paying job. I mean, they in this report, it has their pay scales according or pay rates according to their positions, and they have three different, they call band 1, band 2, and band 3. And she went from a band 1 pay schedule to a band 3, which is actually about, ballpark, about $20,000 less pay on the high end, and she retained the maximum pay for the band 1. So, I mean, under their own rules,
yeah,
she gets to keep her higher pay, and I don't know how they, I mean, gosh, I'd like to be able to do that.
But see, a lot of this is supposed to be for hardship. So if the director of the Philadelphia office left and they searched and searched and searched and, you know, a year goes by and they still can't get anybody to go there.
Well, that's different.
Right.
But you can't create the hardship and then say, well, the good is my heart. I'm going to go ahead and volunteer for this because I am the only qualified person. And by the way, the guy that had the job before who didn't really want to leave it, he's out too.
I know. I made him leave.
Made him move.
Well,
and that's a whole other story.
The one line that I really liked when I saw this report initially is... at the end of page 2, the VA or the Inspector General says, we made criminal referrals to the U.S. Attorney's Office, District of Columbia, regarding official actions orchestrated by Ms. Rubens and Ms. Graves. You very rarely see the words criminal action in these. Formal discussions regarding prosecutorial merit are pending. They provided 12 recommendations to VA to increase oversight of this program and determine appropriate administrative actions, blah, 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 against senior VA officials. But I like the criminal charges part. I was kind of excited about that.
Okay. The thing that bothers me, though, is had they not gotten these emails, they would not have known. You know, then they would have probably come back and said that the expenses were legal on its face. And, you know, the decrease per law in salary is legal. And this would have been okay. Like, the only reason, in my opinion, from reading this report, it appears that they found anything wrong with any of this was because of the emails where they found the intent and, you know, the what they were really doing behind the scenes. And it's a shame because in a lot of situations where if you said, oh, I think the Eastern Area director isn't picking me for a job, I think she's picking her friends, okay, you would never be able to really prove that unless you got into their email account. So to me, it's interesting that when the Inspector General actually goes in and reads their email account, what they found, and it makes me wonder, you know, when a lot of people say, oh, I didn't get a fair chance at this, or, you know, there's so much cronyism in the VA, it's hard to get selected for a job unless you're in the crowd, you know, when I read this report, it made me wonder if, you know, there's more truth to that than they're willing to admit.
Oh, yeah, and this report does, I mean, I really would encourage people to go read this. I mean, typically, you know, go read a government report, that's something you do because you have insomnia.
Oh, yeah.
And you're out of sleeping
this
pills.
This one here you won't put down.
this one
really
it was fun
does a number on
it. It was
them.
Fun listening to Bill read it. He's like, what? Did you see
oh,
this
Oh, yeah.
One?
My highlighter ran out of ink.
I know. I gave him a highlighter. I'm like, you're going to want this. We need to take a really quick break, and we're going to come back with Kristen and explore some more of the Inspector General's report that just came out September the 28th on inappropriate use of position and misuse of relocation program and incentives. And in case you're wondering why veterans' claims aren't being processed in a timely fashion, it might be due to the musical chairs going on at the VA. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back.
I hear something saying...
Well, don't you know?
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang.
Obvious song choice.
Well, I tell you.
We had so many song options. Seriously, I was driving down the highway at, like, I don't know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, listening to Satellite, and these songs just kept coming on. I couldn't believe it. I was a dangerous driver, but I was the only one on the road, so as long as there were no deer, I was good. But I was jotting all these down because, well.
Well, I'll tell you what.
If
you read this report, I mean, there's just so many little tidbits in here. But it sounds like the curtain's coming down on some of these folks, and it's going all the way to the top. Here on page 17, it says a couple of the recommendations that came out of this report. It says we recommend the deputy secretary consult with the Office of General Counsel to determine whether bills of collection should be issued to recover unjustified relocation expenses paid by the Veterans Administration for senior executive reassignments. Because I mean that program's just totally getting abused. So they could be getting a big fat bill to repay some of that stuff. And then the other one that I thought was interesting was. They want to refer to the general counsel to determine whether action should be taken to hold the appropriate senior officials accountable for processing and approving payments of unjustified relocation incentive payments. So that goes beyond Rubens, and I mean that goes right to the top of who signed off on these expenses. I don't know. I think if nothing else, it's going to make this whole system get kind of revamped a little bit, but I think criminal charges should be, or repayment or something ought to be laid on these folks, because, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Well, how many times would you have to do this before, you know, people thought twice? What do you think, Kristen? You think if these guys really got bumped down, do you think that it would slow this kind of thing down just based on, I mean, you deal with the culture at VA?
I think the average employee in the VA will say, nothing's ever going to happen to these people. Like, how many things, you know, do we have to hear about in the news before something actually happens? There's no accountability. So I think they definitely need some accountability, whether it be with this situation or any of the other ones that are pending, because people need to realize there's some people that work there, and they've worked there a very long time, and they probably shouldn't be in the jobs that they're in, but they're probably also not going to be leaving anytime soon. So for those kind of people that, you know, maybe don't have the morals and the ethics that they need to be in charge, at least if they see something happen to somebody, they might think twice about doing it themselves. So well, I feel like there has to be a lesson learned, whether it's with this situation or any of the others, to show that you have to do the right thing, or at least try to do the right thing, or, you know, this place is going to run crazy.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Employees is a very weird place. I mean, I've been out of the building about 3 weeks. And I will say it's been the best 3 weeks of my life, of my work life, because it's just a weird place to go. You go into this place and you think about, okay, our leadership team, and they're, half of them are missing from, you know, we have an assistant director position vacant. Our pension center manager hasn't been there since the report about the party came out, and we've had four different ones come in since. So, it's not a very stable place. We have people in other positions that are acting that have been brought up from their jobs to help fill in some slots. Everything's always changing. There's no consistency, and the employees are kind of getting sick of it because it's just
a strange place to work, and there, the office is in the newspaper probably once every few weeks, and it's always something really crazy. And there's been, this will be the fourth congressional hearing about our office coming up in October. So if you work there, you know, it's a weird place to be.
Well, is anybody even, I mean, I know this sounds bad, but is anybody even supervising the employees with all this craziness going on with the musical chairs in the top ranks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for the most part, it hasn't, anything that's happened in this whole scandal hasn't touched the level of the direct supervisors, as in the, you know, there's like groups of employees that are supervised by what they call a coach and an assistant coach. It hasn't really come down to that level. It's mainly been with our upper management. So people, the problem is usually if you're a supervisor or you're a new supervisor and you're not sure, you need someone to ask. And in our building, there's not that many people left to ask because, you know, a lot of our leaders aren't there or are under investigation or something's going on, where you kind of run out of people. If you want to do the right thing, you need to find someone who knows what the right thing is. And in the last few reports that have come out, whether it be the people didn't know, you know, with the fast letter, they said they didn't understand it, or we have this report where the IG seems to think these things were possibly intentional. So whether it's you don't know what you're doing or you're doing things wrong on purpose, that's still not a good person to go ask the question to. So we're running out of those kind of people that are left in the building.
Well, just to support what you're saying, in this report, they talk about Robert McKendrick, who was the director of the Philadelphia office. He was hired in March of 2012 as the director, and in an April 2015 interview, he told the IG that he was the director of the Federal Security Officers at LaGuardia Airport and Transportation Security Administration prior to joining VA. And they determined that he was, he did not have prior VA experience at the time he was hired in 2012. And so that's just that gives you kind of a look at who's at the top. And you're right. How can you go to somebody like that and expect results when they can't possibly understand the system or know how it works? When, I mean, gosh, the guy came from a security position at an airport. He doesn't know anything about the VA system.
Yeah, is that common?
Well, and he was in charge when we started reporting those duplicate records. So the problem was he has probably never processed a VA claim in his life.
Right.
The closest he might have to the VA is that he might have, maybe, I don't know what his, you know, background is, but I know he is a veteran, so maybe he's applied for a claim before, but it's a lot different when you're trying to explain to somebody a computer program that's not working and tax consequences and wasted money, and they just showed up here and they've never, you know, done this job in their whole life. But in the VA, in defense of the VA on this one, we were very happy when we started seeing that they were bringing someone else in from the outside, because there is a lot of cronyism and nepotism in different offices at the VA. We were very happy to see an outsider come in, where we thought if we had a problem and we told him or her about the problem, they might take it a lot more serious because they're not, you know, already entrenched with this bureaucracy that's going on. So we were excited, and I did work with him on many occasions, and I did think he was a good guy. And I do think he came in there and he was trying to do the right thing when he first got there. It's just that he was the outsider. Everybody else had been working together for many years and they had a plan for how they wanted things to work. And if I had to guess, it was probably him against, you know, his idea of what he thought was right to do versus all these other people that have been working there for so long. And if he had to go to a meeting with a top VA official or something, I would think he'd need one of these people under him to help him because he doesn't know much about the VA.
Well,
so he had to rely on these people so much that it wouldn't be a good idea not to get along with them.
And just to support what you're saying, that probably explains why he got stepped on so hard on this whole transfer thing. I mean, they just blew him out of there and stuck him in another office that he really didn't want to go to, it sounds like in this report. But again, with the lack of experience on how the whole system worked, it just looks to me like he got railroaded.
Well, the thing, I mean, from an employee standpoint, which, you know, we never really know what's going on. We're limited to what we read in the news or what we read in these reports. Like, it's not like they get everybody together and have a meeting about this stuff.
Sure.
The topic right now is like a don't talk about it type topic. from what people are saying in the office. Like, some people are scared to talk about it, other people don't know what's going on. But, you know, from what it looks like as an employee, he was our director one day, and then he left. Okay, he didn't say, like, goodbye. I didn't see an email that went out that said, like, goodbye, employees, you know, it's been nice working with you. Like, he sort of just disappeared. And from an employee standpoint, that was a weird thing. Like, this guy came in, and he was, you know, pledged to do all these things and had this mission statement, and we were excited to see a new face, and then one day he just literally disappeared without warning.
They're there, and then they're not. We need to take one really quick break here before the top of the hour. We got a little behind with our video shenanigans. Kristen will be here the second hour, too, and we'll be digging more into this. So don't worry. We're not cutting you out of any good news today. You can find all this information online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly.
When it all goes crazy and the thrill is gone, the days get rainy and the nights get long, when you get that feeling you were born to, staring at your ceiling and thinking of your blues. When there's so much trouble that you wanna cry, the world has crumbled and you don't know why. When your hopes are fading and they can't be found,
your troubles are right.
Waiting to let you down.
Hey, your friends have let you down. Yeah. Yeah, look at that. Mr. Pummel, he went ahead and he told them that they probably were trying to scam salary increases and bonuses. I tell you what, I haven't heard that song in years, and kind of surprised me how perfect it was. Call it the VA management theme song. So Kristen, what other stuff in this report were you... What else do you think we ought to hit in this before the top of the hour, or maybe give people a sneak preview into the next hour? No pressure. Hey, come on, you've got 39 pages to work with, right?
What did you say?
I said you got 39 pages to work with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the interesting thing to me was when I looked at the chart to see all the people that were moved in the last 2 years, how much of a percentage of a salary increase he got, or the incentives that are paid. The one guy, I think he said he got $40,000 to move, you know, like a bonus to actually move. And to me, that kind of stuff where, you know, they're saying that they're talking about furloughs. You know, we got all the notices about furloughs and the government not coming up with a budget and not having enough money to operate. And then you see these huge amounts of money. And this is only looking at 2 years. Who knows what's been going on before that?
Well, it's if you read this report on page 28, they give a very nice little list of all the employees in 2014 and 2015 who did transfers and got pay increases, and it shows the percentage of increase. I mean, some of these are pretty substantial.
18% increases.
No, I got one here that's 27,000 a year increase, and that was Antoine Waller. He took a transfer, went from 139,000 a year to 167,000 a year, and gosh,
he's the person. That's the person though that Kim Graves took the position from.
Yeah. Yeah, so he was in that cascading maneuvering. All right, we're coming
back.
What
did it really cost the taxpayers for all this maneuvering?
No kidding.
Not just her.
If you are by your computer, you should go to wethepeopleradio.us and click on this report, because it's really kind of worth following along. We'll be right back with Kristen Ruhl for a second hour.
Oh.
Just listen.
Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. Yeah, kind of loud, huh?
Yeah.
Fun music, but holy cow.
Yeah.
All right, so you're joining Aaron.
And Bill.
And Bob.
If it's Sunday afternoon between noon and 2, we're live. You can join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We always have a chat window open that at that time. We post the archive by about 2:30 Sunday afternoon, and then this program airs on WNJC 1360 AM in Philadelphia and New Jersey. So the topic of our discussion today is the Inspector General's report on the Veterans Administration, inappropriate use of position and misuse of relocation program and incentives. It, I don't know when it actually started, but the first time it hit a major VA hearing in Washington was April 22nd of this year. And we have that link posted for you. We played some of that the first hour. And so the current director of the Philadelphia Regional Office worked a deal, kind of. I mean, you can see by the emails that are in that report. It's 39 pages. Good reading, actually. Normally, I'd say don't read the report because it's boring, but this is really a pretty fun report.
I think I make a movie out of this
thing. Yeah, all the people, you start noticing the names, you know, and how they all cross up, but yeah, these guys are not allowed to have management bonuses anymore, so they've undertaken a maneuvering scheme, kind of a musical chairs, if you will, to keep the salaries that they have, but move into positions with lower responsibility that would normally pay less money.
Right.
AKA an engineer bonus.
Also, too, you know, the moving expenses, and they get to sell their house, and the government, you know, has a program to buy the house, which, you know, and I'm not saying that every time it's a bad deal, because I'm sure there's people that do relocate that.
Well, they make you move. Like, they made my dad move when we lived in Seattle. He got transferred to the home office in Hartford. I'm sure they moved us.
Yeah,
as a kid,
they're not all crooked, but the way they're structuring these now, it just looks like it's a way for them to relocate. Keep their same rate of pay, get a big fat moving expense, and walk away fat and happy with less responsibility. And then, I don't know, maybe do it again, you know?
And if you can get the other guys to move, you read this report and you see how they all got moved one click. One leaned on the other one, and they've got the emails right in there out of their own.
And if you're wondering what, you know, how much money we're talking about, let's see, page 31 of this report actually breaks it down. It says Table 8, relocation, AVO-related expenses for VBA reassignments. It gives you a list of the people that have been reassigned since 2013, what their relocation expenses were, their AVO expenses, their PCS expenses, and it breaks it all down. And since 2013, it looks
total
like...
Total expenses, $1.753 million.
Yeah. Now... all that necessary?
I also think if you look at like a part of the, if you look at the large expense, like the Diana Rubin's expense, she, you know, when you look at that, some people think that she got that money. She didn't actually. A huge bulk of that money went because of the sale of her house.
Exactly.
So if you have a really expensive home, the government, it was like 20 something percent that they paid this other financing company, or this company that, you know, I guess buys and sells the houses. But
yeah, because her house was like $770,000 and they paid 200 and some odd thousand to make, I guess it makes up the difference between what you were going to lose in the current market and,
well, they take,
and what you owe.
I read the requirements there, and they basically have to get independent appraisals of the property. They get two appraisals from independent folks, and then the company that they hire to work with the VA buys the home for that amount of money. Well, if a house is appraised at a particular price, doesn't necessarily mean that the market, I mean, you might not be able to sell it for that.
Well, they only also have to, it's a 60-day thing, too, which I think is far too short. Like, I mean, if the house doesn't sell in 60 days, then this other company buys this house, and it's kind of like, well, that's a real short time to turn your house around. And, you know, I think that they should have a longer time limit there, and they should have a person not inside the VA looking at this. Like, if the whole government is privy to this program, there should be an actual government group of people that looks at this, approvals for all the agencies. I don't think the agency should approve its own, because it's seeing what happens.
Yeah, this is exactly what happens. And but, yeah, that's a really good point. When they say, oh, she got $300,000 in moving expenses, you know, the major part of that is buying her home so she can buy a new home in her new location. But then when you start looking at her temporary housing, meals, I mean, that's where they started crossing the line and getting paid for things that maybe they shouldn't have gotten paid for. And I think that's going to be the topic of some payback, isn't it?
Well, I mean, when I look at the meals and stuff, it's kind of like, if we didn't advertise the position in Philly, so we don't know if the position was hard to fill or not, which, as you can see by reading the report, Waller had no problems coming to Philadelphia, so it couldn't be that hard to fill Philadelphia if this guy was, you know, wanted to come here. But, and Mac apparently didn't want to leave, and I'm only, you know, saying what I've read in this report.
Right,
I don't know, because
right.
You've never told me. But, you know, to take somebody and pay that much on their house and to move them and then pay for their meals and dry cleaning when they don't really even need to move here, to me, is, you know, a waste of money. So,
well, yeah, because the requirement says they aren't eligible for that money unless they can't fill the position or are having difficulty. I forget the exact wording of it, but if they're having difficulty filling the position and somebody has to, you know, move to fill it, then they're eligible for the whole housing program and all of that. That's not what happened here. Actually, she volunteered to move, so that I would think disqualifies her for the you know, the whole housing part right off the top, doesn't it?
I mean, yeah, based on what the report says and the requirements, I would say so. And then the thing is, we also paid relocation for the people that, when McKendrick left, there's charges on there for his relocation. So, you know, they said a bill of sale for this, but I mean, I feel like, as a taxpayer, there's a lot more money than just Kim Graves and Diana Rubin.
Oh, yeah, it trickles down.
All these other ones.
Sure, it relocates a whole bunch of people. And
right.
Yeah,
and
it's
well, it's kind of interesting. Poor McKenrick, when he was interviewed, he said while he was interested in the challenges at Los Angeles, he didn't want to go there. Okay, it's interesting, but I don't want to go there. Specifically, he said, quote, just being interested says it's interesting, it's unique, it's different. Well, would you go? Only if you direct reassigned me. So I guess that's, you have to go there or you don't have a job anymore? Is that what that means?
He says in the report that that's what he thought it meant.
Yeah. Only if you direct reassigned me, only if you told me I absolutely had to go, and that was in the best interest of the agency, absent being removed, or whatever the letter said, you're subject to adverse action or something, McKendrick said. It's not a volunteer in my mind. I'm not volunteering. I'm saying it's interesting, and I want to understand it. So he didn't apply to any of the announcements for the Los Angeles position, and he preferred to stay in Philadelphia. But it's like
well, here's the requirement. The policy states an agency may pay a relocation incentive to a current employee who must relocate to accept a position in a different geographical area if the agency determines the position is likely to be difficult to fill in the absence of an incentive. Well, it wasn't difficult to fill. She volunteered to move. So how difficult?
Well, and the other issue is the position wasn't even open. It was
right.
filled.
Yeah, and their argument that it was difficult to fill is bogus because they never advertised and they never made it available to anybody else. And they said that in the hearing.
Yeah, it's the whole program, I think. I mean, you know, whether Diana Rubens or Kim Graves did something legal or not, the program on its face has major flaws. And I think in the report it says it's available to federal employees. So I feel like any federal employee and all the agencies can use this. You know, they have some sort of program similar to this. My question is, who audited this? Because had the IG not gotten a tip from somebody to checked this out, or whoever this came about, whoever got a tip, they wouldn't have found this out. It's not like there was an audit, and you know, from
they stumbled onto it.
Right. So my question is this routinely audited? Because we might be wasting money all over the country on this.
Well, yeah, and you have a great point there. This is just one agency. You know, could be happening with every, well, probably is happening with every federal agency that's figured out that, hey, we can kind of skirt the system a little bit here and make it quite lucrative to move around the country and basically get paid for it. And there's a lot of federal agencies out there. So, I mean, when you're talking $1.7 million just for the VA in a couple of years, gosh, you got to wonder.
Well, and that's the stuff you found. I mean, that's 23 reassignments, $1.8 million for 23 reassignments reviewed from 2013, 14, and 15, including salary increases, relocation expenses, and the AVO, the housing.
Well, plus, so that number, what that means is that number is going to continuously grow. That's not the ultimate
of
those 23, because every year the salary increase, you know, say that you got a $30,000 salary increase, well, in 3 years, that's
$90,000. Exactly. And those keep going. So you could have hired people for the correct amount in those different locations, but instead you bumped people down, kept them at their same salary. So you can see how this thing would just mushroom over time. I mean,
yeah, I just feel like as a taxpayer, this program needs to be looked into, and possibly, you know, I think there should be a limit on how much that you're, you know, if your house, if you're going to give 20-something percent on the price of a house, there should be a limit on, you know, what that house could be. Because if someone had like a $3 million house, that ends up being a lot of money.
Yeah. And so it's interesting. Somebody in the chat here says, you know, we get it that people are crooked, known it for years. When is something going to change? Well, it's going to change when we get a new occupant in the White House who appoints a secretary of the VA who actually, you know, cares about this kind of stuff and can fire them. They have to be fired in that system. I mean, Congress doesn't get to fire them. They get to investigate them. The IG can turn them in for criminal charges, but they don't get to fire them either. At the end of the day, the agency management is the agency management. And they've got to do the deal. But I would imagine if there's enough pressure, I mean, this is all just, you know, it's about pressure. Because these sorts of things going on, I was at a thing last night. It was an Agent Orange town hall. And one of the guys got up who works in the Veteran Service Office, and he said, you know, this is, you know, I'm sure there's some bad things going on, but for the most part, they're just overwhelmed. They need more money and they need more employees. And it's kind of like a toll booth. And if you have a lot of cars stacked up and only one guy at the toll booth, it's going to slow everything down. And I guess things like this isn't something that is solved with more employees and more money.
I feel like I hear that all the time, and when I work there and I see what they use the money that they have for. And I mean, just internally, for instance, I've made a few suggestions about time cards. Something as simple as an employee's time card, where, you know, you took off these 3 days last week and you're supposed to get paid for all of them and put in this much sick leave or annual leave, you know, however that happens in our system. They have one of those people on each team, which to me is a waste of money. If you're a team of all GS-12 people, like the team I was on is all GS-12s and GS-13s. Well, if one of us is the timekeeper, you're paying someone over $80,000 a year to do a duty that could arguably be maybe clerical or data entry. So the things that they use their money for baffles me. And when you make a suggestion and say, hey, you know, I think that maybe you should have three timekeepers that are GS, you know, a lower GS rate, you know, that's equal to the duty that they're doing, and they can do all the time for the whole building instead of having a timekeeper on each team who is, you know, greatly overpaid for doing data input.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, it's like those kind of things, you know, every year they just continue. And at some point you see, like, there's a little bit of waste here, a little bit of waste there, and it just all adds up.
Meanwhile, the claims pile up while all this all these shenanigans are going on, because you can't possibly have an efficient system if folks are coming in and out and looking at ways to enrich themselves. Obviously, when that's the goal, the mission suffers slightly. That was a joke. just in case somebody writes me a hateful note on this chat room, you're not taking this seriously. Yeah, I'm taking it seriously. It just pisses me off. And if I actually say what I think, it's probably not a good idea. So, anyway, we should take a quick break and grab some decaf, switch off the straight black coffee here. You are listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We will be back with more on the VA management musical chairs when we return.
With so many lies, you twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I can see the things you're doing, and you think that I'm naive. But when I get the goods on you, she'll finally believe. Well, she says it's all just drama, but every bubble's got to pop. She's gonna see just what you're doing, and then you're finally gonna have to stop.
Don't think you're gonna win this time, cause you better believe I'm gonna drop a dime on you.
I'll get ya, yeah, I'll get ya.
And when I do, you're gonna be busted. I don't wanna put the hurt on you, but you better believe me when I tell you that I finally got the dirt on you.
And we can only hope.
we couldn't resist, Kristen. It was kind of funny. Okay, so in your, you do pension management, right? Are you still there?
Yes. Yep. Well, I'm not currently. But are you doing? Up to 3 weeks ago, that was what I did.
Do you do? Oh, up until when?
3 weeks ago.
Wow. And so you're back in benefits.
Yeah, actually, well, I was doing pension, which was, you know, the income-based benefit. I was on the quality team, and then I accepted a detail, which is, you know, they're just borrowing me to do a task, and I'm working for Washington currently out of my house and home, which is actually a very, seeing that there's a good plan ahead, because I'm on this team of people that we take suggestions about processes that probably aren't going right, or red tape reduction. This month is, you know, energy month, where if there's ways to save money, these employees can go into this idea bank called the Idea House, and they can put their suggestion in, and then we review the suggestion. So in the past, if you wanted to make a suggestion at the VA, you had to go through HR, or, you know, maybe write to the undersecretary or the secretary, or tell your bosses. But, you know, for years, I noticed that those methods, at least for me, weren't working. I would be making suggestions, and they'd be going nowhere, because the people reviewing my suggestions were the ones that were, I guess, okay with the status quo. So this new job that I have, there's people reviewing the suggestions that don't agree that everything's perfect at the VA. They're more a realist, and they, you know, say, okay, well, we can't say that everything's fine. You know, we watch the news, we read these reports. Let's fix it. And it's a positive environment. The people are very intelligent. They treat you with the utmost respect, and our mission is to fix VA. So it's really cool.
Well, I think that's lovely. And have you been, you deal with the, Office of Special Counsel, and you go to them in this process for what? Where do they fit in?
The Office of Special Counsel would be the place that you would report if there was a whistleblower retaliation or a violation of a rule of law, or procedure, a gross waste of funds. So I used to go to them all the time. I went to them with the duplicate payments. I went to them.
You're fading out on us. We need you to fade back.
Okay.
Oh, there you go.
you were
like getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
So I would always report things to the Office of Special Counsel, but the stats on them is about, I think they accept about 5% of the cases filed. And I just watched congressional testimony of Carolyn Lerner, who is the special counsel. And she said that, you know, she's very short-staffed, like with the amount of complaints that have come in. And she talked about the number that come in from the VA being a lot larger than a lot of other agencies. And that there's just so many of them that they can't give all of them attention. It's just like a manpower issue. So with them, I don't have as much luck. If it's a whistleblower case, if you file for whistleblower retaliation, which I think we touched on in a prior one of our shows, that it has to be a personnel action. So the things like when I originally reported that my car was damaged, they wouldn't accept that. They said you have to contact the police. So they don't have jurisdiction over anything criminal, or it has to be like if you say I'm a whistleblower and I'm getting retaliated against. I was being followed around by a certain manager, and they were timing my break. And when I reported that, you know, they say, well, there was no personnel action. Like, you aren't fired or suspended for more than 14 days. So the problem with the OSC is a lot of things get denied because unless you're fired from your job or demoted and it's blatantly obvious, there's no retaliation there on the whistleblower side.
So
if it's a gross waste of funds, it has to be a lot of money or they really don't take your case.
So a lot of what should protect whistleblowers is actually written too narrowly. And my guess is the management already knows those rules.
Oh, for sure. I believe the management is experts in retaliating, because the things that happened to me in that building, it's hard to prove sometimes. You have to prove that there was no other legal reason to do this. So they did it because you were a whistleblower. And then what they do to you has to be something that qualifies as a personnel action. So if they follow you all day, or they, you know, harm you or counsel you or call you in and yell at you, like, none of that stuff matters. It doesn't count.
No kidding. So they could literally just harass you, and because it's not, because they're not writing you up, it doesn't count.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, everything, you know, it has to be, the way the law is written to equal retaliation, it's a pretty serious thing. So the daily harassment and nonsense that goes on is ridiculous, and no one should have to go through that. I mean, there was an email that was sent around the whole office that someone had written about me, about not getting bonuses because of my mouth. That's not a personnel action, so that's okay.
Really?
So it's
not against the rules in any way to send defamatory emails about other employees to other employees? That's okay?
Apparently. I mean, I'm sure there is some rule that would prohibit that, but when you go to, you know, the OSC for that or different places, they say, you know, where's the retaliation? Or a manager didn't do this. It was an employee that did this. So it's, you know, that's another issue. So it's kind of like once you become a whistleblower, you should just assume that it's going to be an uncomfortable atmosphere in the office and be ready for that. If nothing is fast, it takes forever when you report something and it comes to fruition. So you have to kind of be patient and be ready
because here it comes, huh?
Yeah.
Are you still working with a bunch of other coworkers that are speaking out?
Yes, actually, a lot of people in our office are speaking out. People at all levels, and it's a good thing because we're seeing a lot of changes in our building. So,
nice.
I think people realize now it's okay, and if you speak out and you tell the truth, you don't always have to get fired.
Are you still having to provide legal counsel for them, or is the fact that there are so many of you kind of giving everybody cover?
Yeah, to be honest, we're noticing that problems are being, you know, nipped in the bud. So I normally come in and help somebody if they file an EEO complaint and it gets to the point of like a mediation and they ask me to help them. But a lot of times now I'm noticing, you know, they're writing an email and it's getting handled. And I will say, Diana Rubens, that is something that she did do in the office. If you would send her an email about a problem, she would usually try to address it. So I feel like when she came, they realized, okay, if we don't want all these things filed against us, we need to address problems before they get to a certain step and level. Because these EEO complaints, if you're using taxpayer money to pay for lawyers and pay employees, if you're going to settle a case, there's really no urgency. You know, that's just my opinion. I noticed that it didn't matter. They didn't have an interest in settling quickly, because if it was their own money, they probably would want to settle quickly so the fees don't get bigger. But there's really no urgency to settle these cases. But when a whole bunch of them came in and Jeff Miller said, let me look at these EEO complaints, why do you have so many? Let me, you know, and he asked for all the records. I noticed that when they're being watched or they know that someone's looking at them, then they don't want tons of them filed. So they're making more of an effort to settle these things before they get to formal complaints.
Interesting. And what kind of...
I've actually had a lot less of that type of work, which is a good thing. I mean, there are some changes being made that are good. And Diana did do some really good things for the office. So it was very sad for me to read that report. I mean, if it's true, it's sad.
Well, yeah, because it's just kind of the tip, you know, like anything else, just the tip of the iceberg. You know, when you find out stuff like this is going on, it's usually not, that's not the bulk of it. The bulk of it's hidden somewhere. We need to take a really quick break. We're going to come right back. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. All the info is there. Oh, yeah, another good song. You're going to like this one, too.
If you search for tenderness, it isn't hard to find. You can have the love you need to live. But if you look for truthfulness, you might just as well be blind. It always seems to be so hard to give. Honesty is such a lonely word. Everyone is so untrue. From you.
Trouble, oh, trouble, 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 trouble. Feels like every time I get back on my feet, she come around and knock me down again. Worry, oh, worry, 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 worry. Sometimes I swear it feels like this worry is my only friend.
Oh, we couldn't resist. You know, it's fun when you search some of these keywords, you know, like a song. You know, I heard one song and I thought, hey, that's funny. So I searched the word trouble. Boy, there's lots of versions of that song.
I think there's a lot of trouble coming down the line for some of these folks,
too. I think there is
too.
A lot of trouble coming.
And I mean, I wouldn't want to be in their shoes right now. I mean, not knowing when the next little report's going to come out or the next summons is going to show up in your mailbox.
Well, you know, and people want to know, well, you know, why isn't something happening to them right this minute? It honestly takes time. It just takes a long time. The system is big, complicated, and there's a lot of them. There are a lot more of them than there are the people that are investigating them, which I guess is good. I mean, if everybody was investigating and very few people were doing the work, that would be screwed up too. But, you know, they're protected as employees, not in the good way like you would be in a regular corporation. In a regular corporation, like we were just at Olive Garden, for instance, last night, and the girl said, you know, hey, when you, because they have little computers on your table where you pay your bill, and she said, hey, after you pay your bill, you know, could you do the survey? Because if we don't get good surveys, we just get fired. And I'm like, so people write you bad surveys? She goes, no, if they don't write any surveys. If they don't grade us high and a lot of people don't take the survey, then we just get fired. So they have this veritable revolving door going on with their employees because people see, hey, do you want to take a survey? And you go, oh, forget that. I'm ready to go home, you know.
I would think most people don't take the survey.
No. I know.
That's scary to have your job writing on that.
Yeah. No kidding. And so she said, hey, could you please make sure and do the survey? I was like, gee, sorry. I've been here. I haven't been there.
It's part of the dinner requirement now.
I haven't been there in years.
To protect your waitress.
And I think, oh, my gosh, in the last few months I went there twice for lunch. Which is why I said, hey, we should try them again, you know, and go there for dinner. But the other two times, we didn't do the survey. Ruh-roh. Sorry. Sorry, girl in the unemployment line. I didn't know.
Blood on your hands.
I do. I have blood on my hands. So if you go to Olive Garden, do the dang survey, because those people's lives are hanging in the balance. Not like the VA where there is no survey. That would be fun, though. Maybe we should have a survey for them. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, survey. Survey says...
Because, you know, you have a lot of things. This is indicative of a far larger problem. And we pick on this one agency just because we have so much information. You know, we could talk about EPA or anybody else, but we need some guys on the inside to give us the scoop. Otherwise, we're just, you know, kind of talking out our hat. But VA is no different than a lot of different agencies. And without somebody in the president's chair who really wants to make a difference and requires their cabinet-level guys, the secretary of everything, if they don't require them to go roll some heads, because they could if they wanted to.
I think if they wanted to know the truth, they could easily find it out, though. I mean, if I was in charge of an agency, I would do a surprise visit, and I wouldn't go... When we have people that are, you know, so-called important showing up at our office, they get toured around with the same group of people every single time. They never come talk to people like the normal employees. So if you really wanted to know what was going on in these places, you could walk back and talk to the bargaining unit employees without, or they'll come up and talk to them with this entourage around them of upper management, where if you see anything that's true, you know, that's not nice about them, they're, you know, the visitor's going to leave in about an hour, and these people that just listen to what you said are going to be your bosses still. And, I mean, I learned that just from speaking the truth publicly. You know, I definitely wasn't a fan favorite of management, but I just felt like something has to get done.
Yeah, and if you speak out at the wrong time, well, I see that, you know, with whistleblower calls that I get, then, you know, if people don't think you're going to, for one, be in office very long, so you might not be able to do something about it, or you're going to turn them into their agency, because that happens too. They call an elected official's office, and that person in turn calls the agency and rats them out. I've heard that from people. And there's a lot riding on it. So if they don't think something will happen, they won't speak up if it's not, you know, if it's not productive and it isn't safe for them.
Well, if it's an environment that's hostile towards the employee, I mean, it's, let's face it, they got to have a job.
Yeah, you're putting it on the line. So, but there's always that, there are always those people who will march out first. And where were you in the flow of whistleblowers on Philadelphia, just out of curiosity? Like, were there a bunch of people that came and went, and then you guys kind of got organized, or were you the beginning of the wave?
Yeah, honestly, nobody used to stand up for themselves when I first started working there in 2007, I guess it was. And I was shocked. I would see adults that had told me, you know, that they'd been through wars and things like that, and, you know, things that I'm like, wow, you know, that's really awesome, you're my hero. And they could do these amazing things, but then when it came to standing up for themselves at work, they couldn't do it. I mean, and I would see, like, upper-level managers, you know, just get abused, and I'd watch it, and I thought it was so strange. You know, like, why isn't anyone doing anything about this? And they would tell me, oh, it's not wise, you know. There's too many of them. If you speak up, they'll get you. And I'd see things happening to me where I was like, oh, wow, they're right. But it just, you know, you have to know who to talk to. You have to align yourself with people that are stronger than they are. Because most people bring everything up internally. Well, you're never going to win that battle. So unfortunately, you had, at the time when Philadelphia was as bad as it was, you had to go externally because nobody internally was going to help you. And so there weren't really any other whistleblowers. And then that's when I met Ryan Cease, and we saw the problems with the money and the payments. And we said, well, we're going to do the right thing because we have to. You know, this is crazy. We'd see veterans sitting in boxes for years, their claims not being done because we had the wrong claim number in the system for them and we weren't able to fix it quickly. So that person just sat in the box, and it was so sad. So we realized, like, morally, it was the right thing to do. Even if we were going to jeopardize our future and our job and everything else, we had to do it. And then we met Ken, which I think on a prior show we talked about how we met.
Yep.
And then it was Ken and I, and then Ryan, and then a couple other people, you know, that decided it would be best to do the right thing. And it was hard at the beginning because no one wanted to be associated with us. Nobody wanted, I used to go to coffee with a group of people, and they no longer started, I noticed they stopped asking me to go to coffee when I asked them. They were never available.
they were just super busy all of a sudden.
All of a sudden, you had some cooties on you.
Like, you know, and then you find out people are sending emails around about you, and, you know, it's hurtful. Like, you could be the strongest, you know, you think you're the strongest person or be a strong person, but it's not fun thinking, you know, like, wow, I'm trying to do the right thing, and all these other people, like, are, you know, not helping. So then I guess people started to realize that it was okay. I mean, I survived the whole thing. So I guess they realized, well, I guess you can speak up because she's still here and she's done quite a bit of speaking up. So other people decided. I mean, I've gotten some nice letters from people that say, thank you so much. You gave me the courage to speak up. So that's rewarding to me. And then in the end, I just want, you know, if there's going to always be problems in all these agencies.
Sure.
Because people aren't perfect, but it's just that people need to realize it's okay if something's wrong. It's okay to tell the truth. It's okay not to meet your numbers. You know, employees might make a mistake. That doesn't mean you have to fire them. Like, everyone should just work together and be honest.
Exactly. Because, yeah, firing somebody, like when they had, we talked with Ken, and they gave him all those, you know, that whole room full of complicated cases. We've got a picture posted on that show of what he was met with. And so he couldn't possibly make his numbers. He was being written up all the time. So firing an employee down in the rank and file is obviously... It should be harder, actually, because they're union. Should be harder to fire them than management. But it really isn't.
No, it's much easier because of production. See, management is not on production. So if employees aren't on production, it is very hard to fire them. They have to, like, do something wrong, as in for cause. But if you have a job that's on production, it's extremely easy to fire somebody because you can get fired if you don't make your numbers. And, you know... Sometimes the employee legitimately doesn't make their numbers, and maybe they're not meant for that production job, but there's other times where I've represented people where the person was doing quite fine. Management, you know, might not have wanted them there, so they made it look like that person wasn't doing quite fine. And in those cases, that's where I think there's a big problem. Like, if an employee isn't good at this job, I don't see a problem in telling them that and saying, hey, you know, we have a lot of veterans to serve here, and maybe this isn't your thing, but, you know, you're great with people, and you're happy, and you show up at work all the time. Here's a better place for you. But that isn't how it always goes, so.
Yeah, see, it's interesting because the production does happen at the lower level, but it's really, really affected by... like anything else, by management. You can be great at your job, but if the people that own your company are, you know, pinheads, even in private industry, it can be extremely difficult to get anything done. We need to take one last quick break, and we'll come back, finish up the hour with Kristen, and you can find it all online, wethepeopleradio.us.
I've come to you because I need guidance to be true, and I just don't know.
To take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha!
Tell you what, read enough of this stuff, deal with enough government agencies, and that's where you wind up. So, Kristen, do tell. You are in benefits working from home. How's that work? Like, what do you do?
I love working from home. I think that the government should have everybody work from home because a lot of the stuff that goes on in the office, it would be eliminated. You don't have to worry about, you know, people harassing people and following people and timing people because you would just say you need to do this task and here's your job and get it done. There's hardly any interruptions. The government's going to paperless, so... You know, I'm a fan. I see my family much more because I used to always be driving and commuting and being at the office.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, now that they've, you know, supposedly gone paperless, everything people send to, like, out here, they send it to Oakland. In your area, obviously, they send it to you guys. But it ultimately goes to, what, Janesville, Wisconsin? And I think there's another site, too. It's the other scan place.
Yeah, and I don't know the exact locations of them, but I think that's going to be also great because... we had a lot of problems with mail at our place and whether it was being opened or wasn't being opened and where it was going. Well, now the mail doesn't really come to the places anymore. It goes into a portal and it gets scanned into the computer so that when we process a claim, everything's in the computer. It's scanned up front instead of afterwards.
Yeah, so instead of all this duplicate stuff, you've got big giant folders all over. But, you know, the only thing that sweats me about that is... You know, like in the case out here in Oakland when they had the 13,000 informal claims that had been filed month by month and year sitting in a cabinet that Diana Rubens identified as, you know, claims that needed to be processed back in 2012. She actually did us a solid back then, and then admitted it last year, actually, in a hearing, so that was kind of awesome, too. But when that happened, they could see the paper, you know, and the employees who ultimately became whistleblowers, they could track where those were. They saw the cart, you know, in different places in the building. But if it's electronic, can they... I mean, we had heard that they hide them under, like, a correspondence. Instead of classifying the paperwork as a claim, it was classified as correspondence. It kind of, you know, tucked away in electron land.
I mean, that can happen because the person who's going to look at that claim has to put, like, a tag on it, for lack of a better term, to put it under control so we know we need to work on it. So, I mean, the people who do those type of jobs, a lot of them haven't processed claims before, so sometimes they'll make a mistake because they're not exactly certain. They don't have a lot of time to put this tag on it. You know, they have to do a lot of incoming mail, and they have to, you know, whether it's electronic mail or paper mail, they have to put a tag on this to decide where and who's going to work on it. So a lot of that happens, I think. I think those are training issues sometimes when the IG does their audit, and it looks like... You know, they're doing things intentionally. Sometimes from working there, it's more of a training issue, and they're just not sure. You know, they didn't get enough. The VA is famous for teaching you something and expecting you to know how to do it right after the 30-minute lesson. And
yeah, I was gonna ask you, do they have much of a training program for employees?
You would think it would be fairly...
I would think you'd have to have 56. Somebody kind of watching what you're doing for quite a while until you get... the process now.
Compensation is very structured. They have a good training program. You get sent to Baltimore, at least if you work in Philadelphia, you're sent to Baltimore, and there is something called challenge training. And it's actually a great program. There are real trainers that's what their job is, and they teach you the compensation claims. Pension, which is what I work in, I would say that department doesn't get as much attention as the compensation. It's a lot smaller. A smaller percentage of the claims are pension versus the compensation claims. Because pension claims are income-based claims. They're not service-connected claims. So ours, we don't have a standardized training. Our training is the quality teams teach the employees the job. They teach the training classes. And from being on a team that was supposed to be doing that, you know, there wasn't anyone approving our training material. We made up our own training material. There's training material that Washington gives you, but a lot of it's outdated. The laws change so frequently that you kind of have to update things yourself.
Was the Washington training material, was that the Star Trek uniforms and the bridge on the Enterprise? Oh, that was...
Was that IRS?
I think that was IRS. That's right. Yeah, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that our, you know, the pension department kind of is like, you know, they're like least on the totem pole where they really look into the training and things like that. And compensation, I think the training is very good. In pension, speaking from experience, I think that the training needs to be longer. So people get put on production and quality shortly after they get out of training. Well, then they're petrified because they can lose their job if they don't do enough cases or the cases aren't correct. So before they feel comfortable learning the job, I think most people would say, they're put on production and quality, which causes people to cut corners because they don't want to lose their job. So I think if they cut this production and quality and they train people accurately to do the job, they have changed the way that they interview at our place, which is great because before, I mean, I don't know how they selected people, but it was just, I don't think they were doing the best job, interviewing and picking people to come through here. So now they're tailoring it more to what the job is about. Not just, hey, you know, how are you today? You know, you'd be good at this. And when I got the interview for the job, I answered a few questions and verbally and did one written question, and that was it. You know, I don't think the way that I was interviewed could accurately depict if I can understand laws and interpret them and do, you know, the job that I had to do. So I'm happy to know that has changed. So hopefully they're going to make better selections for people that come in there so that there's not as much turnaround, because there's a high level of turnaround, which is a lot of wasted money as well.
Yeah, and you could see that. You can see that in the process. And, you know, it's funny, though. I'm always looking at this from, it's like, okay, but on the other hand, production is good because we don't want people lollygagging. However, how often are people, and I know you can't give me an actual number, but how often is it just determined, you know, I'm going to pull a few of these things and I'm just going to deny this claim because in order to unravel this mess, it's going to take too long? I mean, is that an alternative to keep the numbers up?
I would say that instead of the I'm going to deny this claim part, it would be I'm just not going to do this one right now.
So it just gets boosted to the bottom of the stack.
Yeah, because if you're getting your production and your quality pulled, and you don't know when it's going to be pulled, anytime during the month, it can be pulled the first day, the last day, and any time in between, and you have five cases randomly pulled, well, you don't know what they're going to pull for you and when. So if you're doing these hard, challenging cases and you have to put them, record them to get your credit for doing them, you know, that's, if someone's quality hasn't been pulled, sometimes that's not one that they're interested in working on. When they could do, that's why when I testified before Congress, a lot of times I said, oh, they choose to do the dead people, because to terminate someone's benefits because you found out that they died, you stop their benefits the first of the month of death. It's probably the easiest type of claim you can do at the VA. So you'll see people trying to find those kind of claims because they're afraid they're going to get nailed on production and quality. And the people that are alive that need help, sometimes they'll put that one aside.
Sure. And so, you know, lately, I wish I had it in front of me. I am remiss. I should have brought it. They just released a thing and said that they had cleared up like 84% of the backlog. It was a crazy number. And yet, I'm not hearing from people that, you know, they all got results on their claims that are years and years old.
Well, that's another thing, that word backlog. The definition of the VA's definition. Okay, so when I think of the word backlog, I think of any pending claim, you know, that's behind or, you know, in our backlog. But the VA's definition of backlog are rating claims. So if you were representing a veteran or you were helping a veteran and they said, I just had a baby and I want to add my child onto my award to get extra money for a dependent. Okay, that type of claim is not considered in the backlog. So, okay, if it's a rating claim, those people will say, yes, I'm happy. The VA has cleared out the backlog, and I got my claim done. But if it's not a rating issue, which is a claim board, then usually that's not considered in the backlog. So, I mean, appeals aren't in the backlog, so there's...
Right. So the appeals, there's no deadline on appeals, so they just sit there, too. Hey, Kristen,
right.
our fun and games have come to an end. Thank you so much for all your insight. I'm so glad you get to work at home. That's awesome. And say hi to all the nice guys out where you are. And thanks a bunch for enjoying the Inspector General's report with
us. We'll definitely have you back, because this story's not over, is it?
Kudos to Linda Halliday, the Inspector General lady who kind of keeps this thing alive, and Jeff Miller, the chair of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and the archive will be up shortly.